very much in favor of the counting of points.
Does it work for you? No.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to The Run Through, your favorite figure skating podcast, where we talk about all the things that make us kiss, make us cry, and make us learn the rules of how figure skating is judged. I'm Adam Rippon.
I'm not Olympic champion Sarah Hughes, here with Ashley Wagner, who I think has maybe something she's been crying about on her
the
face.
Rules.
Adam, look at my face.
Adam, can you see the wound
on
her face?
Oh my God, is that from your daughter?
Yeah, I don't want to call her out and embarrass her on this podcast, but
she's being violent. She needs a little shame.
I was trying to eat her foot, as you do.
Yeah.
Of course. Oh,
that's just so cute. And she's set a boundary.
Her nails.
She said, no, mama, and got me in the face with her raptor claws. She's not a big scratcher, so honestly, I think it's time for me to file her nails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait, that's...
So, yeah, then we had a conversation about, like, gentle touch and faces. Uh-huh. So I have a week to heal before I have to be on TV, but I'm fully prepared to go into hair and makeup and have them put on a prosthetic cheek for me.
I got on this call before Adam was here and I immediately was like, are you okay? And Ashley was like, I'm going to hide my face behind the microphone when Adam gets on so that I can show him live.
Yeah, I didn't notice it at all. You did a good job of hiding the wounds.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
And you still look beautiful.
Oh my God, Sarah, you're so sweet.
Thank you.
We'll work with it. I really feel like I look like I belong in Kiss. Like it's giving.
Yeah. You look G.I. Joe. G.I. Jane, excuse me.
G.I. Jane. So all
I
need
to do
is
No, but I know
just,
what you're
like,
saying. If you had just a little lighter, whiter makeup on your face,
not even. Look at my skin
be...
tone.
I was going to say.
My white walls behind us.
You have a bit of like a Marie Antoinette like skin tone too right now.
Yeah,
let
that's
them
true.
Eat cake and
let them eat feet. Let them eat my feet. Let her eat her daughter's feet.
I just wanted to munch on it. She set a boundary.
Hey,
that's making me
that
sound
sometimes.
Like such a gentle parent, and I am not. Let me tell you
no,
that.
No, I know you're an aggressive parent, so and you have an aggressive daughter, so it's now matching.
Yeah.
Okay, so today we're going to focus on the rules.
Speaking of boundaries,
mm-hmm. There happen to be a lot of rules in figure skating, and this is going to be a great little touch-up for, honestly, all of us as well.
Yeah, I think so.
But we're going to kind of go over just the general situation, but also maybe some highlights of things to watch out for when the men start menning.
Yeah,
completely. You know.
Yeah, so if you are a like diehard figure skating person and you feel like you really know the rules, this episode is not for you.
No, it's for us.
It's for us and for others who might want a refresher or who just might get some enjoyment out of me saying a rule and Ashley and Adam going, what?
Oh, so for sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, so if that's you, definitely. Then stick around. And if it's not, it's fine if you do not want to hang out for this rule session. We have a normal episode for you tomorrow. So
yeah, this is for the normies.
Yeah, exactly.
The
and
muggles.
That's us. We're
muggles.
We're normal. Okay, so...
And Sarah, you're going to be leading us.
I'm going to lead us.
Yes, the only adult. It's your center stage...
Do you feel like we're your children sometimes?
All the time.
Do you feel like you're at risk of being scratched in the face sometimes?
I do. I feel at risk. You have
metaphorically.
Been.
Metaphorically, for sure.
Yeah, Ashley's the one she's the only one in physical danger.
Right.
Yeah, the only one in the vicinity of a child. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, so I will start very, like, very high level, and I think in general we'll keep this high level. There's a lot of weeds. We'll go into some of them just to make sure we've kind of covered our bases, but we can't do everything on this episode. It would take 10 hours to go through all of the different, like, rules that exist in figure skating.
Nobody needs
so
that.
So we're not going to worry about that. But here's the basics, okay? In figure skating, there are four disciplines: men's singles, women's singles, pairs, and ice dance. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I knew that.
For each competition, each entry or competitor, I'm saying entry because some of the entries are a pair or a dance team, will do a short program in ice dance that's called the rhythm dance, and they'll do a free program in ice dance. It's called the free dance. But essentially, they do a short and a long program. And they are judged by, there's a technical panel that essentially calls, quote unquote, the elements that they are performing and assigns levels to leveled elements, which we'll get to, which basically gives the judges a, like, base technical value for each element being performed on the whole in the program. And then the judges, which is a panel of 9 people, give a grade of execution for each of those elements based on how well the elements were performed. And there are a lot of guidelines as to how those people mark grade of execution. There's a ton of guidelines as to how the technical panel is calling elements as well. And again, we can't go into all of it, okay? But that's, like, the basics of how it works. Is there's kind of 2 panels working in tandem. One mm-hmm. is responsible for the actual calling of elements, and one is responsible for the grading of the execution of those elements. And the judging panel is also responsible for assigning component scores to the skaters, which is what we'll call the artistic score, component score, second mark. That's, you know, and so you get a total element score. That's the combination of what the tech panel and the judges gave you for your elements. And then you get a total component score, which is based on, out of a scale of 10, what you've gotten on each of the component categories. There are 3. And those 2 things are combined for your total program score. And then you get a total program score in the short and in the free, and your cumulative score for both of those is your total score in the competition, and whoever has the most points wins. Okay? Are you with
following.
Me?
This has been following. Such a great episode. Thank yeah. you so much, Sarah.
And that's it. Enjoy the Olympics, everyone. Uh-huh. that was like a mouthful just trying to get out what feels very basic.
Yes.
No.
But there's somebody who calls the elements, then there's another panel that judges the elements.
Yep.
Basically.
You put it together.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I always think of the program in, like, 2 chunks. You get a chunk of points for what you did, and you get a chunk of points for how well you did everything.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
Yep. And how you performed it. So mm-hmm. it's kind of 3 chunks if you're, like, considering a, like, what you did and then a how you did it being the grade of execution and then the artistic score being,
yeah,
like, your
everything
third chunk of
in
points.
Between.
Yep. Yeah. So in general, short programs are about 3 minutes long. Men's, women's, and pairs can be a maximum of 2 minutes and 50 seconds. The rhythm dance can be a maximum of 3 minutes. But they all roughly run about that amount of time. And then all of the free programs can run a maximum of 4 minutes and 10 seconds. So it's a bit longer. There's a lot more elements in it and a lot more freedom to it. So which leads me to the required elements in the programs. So the short programs are where you're going to see all the skaters essentially doing the exact same things because they are required to. So in singles, the skaters need to do 3 jump elements, 3 spin elements, and a step sequence for 7 total elements. Mm-hmm. There are requirements about you can't repeat jumps in the short program unless you're doing them in a combination. So you can do, like, a triple toe combination, but you can't separately do a triple toe outside of a combination if you've already done one in your, you know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. you can't do that. You won't get any credit for that. One of your jump passes needs to be an axel. You can do a double or triple axel, or in the case of Ilya Malinin, we might see a quad axel. But that technically is not allowed in the short program.
Right.
So he'll do that in the free skate because these like the short program is very stringent about double or triple axel. And then
do they have a specific rule around the quad axel in the like I would just imagine that there's no language.
Well, he like the language is that they have to do one axel type jump and it has to be a double or a triple. And if he does a quadruple axel in the short program, it's either counted. He either does it in combination or he does it as his solo jump.
But he would have to do a double or triple axel.
In addition. Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. It would not count as his axel.
Which is just like a crazy risk for him to even think about doing that. If something happens to the quad axel and it gets downgraded. So main reason why you're not seeing that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's why we see that in the free skate. And it's the same thing as, like, in the women's short, like, a quad is not part of the required elements, so the women can't do... there aren't women doing quads at the Olympics, other than one, the Russian, but she won't do them in the short program because it's not allowed. So you're doing three spins, you're doing three jump passes, and you're doing one step sequence. So all those programs are going to look roughly the same. And the thing about the short program is that because the requirements are so strict, messing up the requirements is more costly than it is in the free skate. Mm-hmm. If you do, like, you're required to do a, you know, solo triple jump or quad jump for the men, if you like accidentally do a solo double jump, you will get no points and just lose that completely because you didn't.
We see things like that happen a lot. Yeah. That's one of the mistakes to watch out for is any solo jump that isn't your intended axel. If it's a double flip by itself, doesn't count.
Does not count for anything.
No. And because, like, mistakes are never good, but in the free skate, at least, you have the flexibility to change that around. Like, you could add the combination later, so there's more flexibility. Like, it's still costly, but it can be less costly because you can have more of a plan B.
You can problem solve.
Yeah, there's less problem solving because there's less avenues to solve the problems.
Yeah, the short program always, I was the most nervous for short because if you make a mistake... The main problem that I feel like a lot of these athletes run into is something happens on the combination jump. So maybe they fall on the combination jump. They have the option to do a combo on their next jump that was supposed to be their intended solo jump. But then that's like another question mark of what's going to happen. Right. If they miss their combo, the only thing that they cannot do is put the combo on their axel jump. That isn't an option. So you really only have one other shot to get your combo done. It's just, there's not a lot of wiggle room in the short.
Right. And I think it's sort of, you have to be strategic about the way your program is set up. If you're not really consistent with your combination, like, you should try to do it first so that if you miss it, you could maybe put it somewhere else. But a lot of, you know, times, like, the smartest way to set up a program, and we'll talk about this a little bit, but you can get a bonus for a jump done in the second half in the short program. If you put one of your jumps in the second half of the short, you get a 10% bonus on the value of that. So a lot of times skaters will put their combination in the second half and be the last jumping pass because they get a bonus on it and that's the most valuable thing they're going to do. But if you miss it then, you do not have another jump to add a combination to later.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, have you guys ever played Catan?
Yes.
Okay, no. I feel like I'm listening to the rules of Catan for the first time where I'm like, what?
And you know when people are like, it's fine,
you just need to play it out and then you'll get it. So yeah, it's fine. You guys just need to like do a short program and then you'll get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like
the short programs at the Olympics, though, like when you watch them enough times, you will figure out what they're supposed to be doing. Yeah. And you know, hopefully the commentators are like clear when there's a mistake about what the consequences will be for that, because it does happen frequently enough that you'll get the hang of what we're talking about for sure. That's the single short program, and I think we should just stick with singles for now.
Great.
So
that's for the best.
Let's go like a little bit further in to the weeds of the elements a little bit. There are six types of jumps. They all have different values based on their perceived difficulty. Every skater has like a preference of jumps that feel easier or harder to them, but the like agreed upon order of difficulty is toe jump being the easiest, then salchow, then loop, then flip, then lutz, then axel. That is how the points shake out. So that, again, some skaters are going to find the axel jump to be easier than doing a loop jump, but you're going to get more points for an axel regardless. That's the way that the values are set out in the rules. Mm-hmm. And then obviously a double jump is worth less than a triple jump, is worth less than a quad jump. So the men do all variety of quads because Ilya Malinin can do all variety of quads. So we can see all of these jumps done in a quadruple at the Olympics. The women typically do double axels. There are a couple women who will have triple axels at the Olympics. And then there's one woman, Adelia Petrosian, who will do a quad. And that's it. But quads are the norm in the men's event. Mm-hmm. So all of these jumps have like a pre-assigned value. Your jump execution is partially based on the most common error that we're going to see is rotation. So when you get, the goal is to land on your blade going straight back, basically indicating that you fully completed the rotation. But it's very common that a skater will land just a little before they've finished the rotation, or they'll land a lot before they've finished the rotation. And that's how you start to lose points. So if you are like more than a half turn, if you're on the ice before you've finished more than a half turn and you're doing a triple jump, you're only going to get credit for a double. Same with if you're doing a quad, you'll get credit for a triple at that point. If you're more than a quarter turn short, then you're going to get a reduction on the value of that element by 20%. And your grade of execution is going to be low on all of these. And then if you're like exactly, I don't know how everybody can judge this or not, and we sort of hate this rule on this podcast, but if you are exactly on the quarter when you land, you're exactly a quarter short, then they give you a Q, which does not reduce the value of the element, but it does reduce your grade of execution. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see some people like get like death by 1,000 Qs because they land just a little bit short all the time. And that can really like take away from your technical score over the course of a program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just imagine a clock. If they land on 6, that's going to be a complete downgrade. If they land in between the 3 and the 6, that's going to affect the score. If they land right on the 3, that's going to be a Q. So you're really looking for landing like in between 12 and 3. That's the sweet spot for the majority of these skaters.
Really excellent use of clock. Phenomenal use of clock.
Phenomenal use of clock. Phenomenal. So that's how the jumps are judged. And it's pretty like the technical caller is just calling what type of jump it is based on the takeoff that you do, because all the jumps we listed have different types of takeoffs. And then they're calling it based on how many rotations that you do. And then they'll look at where you landed to make sure that it was clean. And then you get a grade of execution on top of that. That's a jump. That's it.
If you don't know the jumps, you probably won't figure it out that quick, but there is one jump that is pretty easy to spot. It's the axel. It starts off forward, ends backwards, which is why it is considered more difficult, because it's an extra half rotation. So if you can spot someone going forward and you want to impress your friends and be like, that axel was amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And basically, like a double axel, I consider it basically, it's like the first triple. Because then the salchow and the toe loop have the same sort of momentum of like the leg that you're going to land on is the leg that kicks through. So that kick through kind of gets you to about like the first rotation being done, which is why these are kind of regarded as like the easier ones. And then the loop, flip, and lutz kind of, they require a bit more of like the purest rotation when they're done correctly.
Yeah.
Because there are skaters who might like tap kind of pre-rotating, but there is no deduction for that. But that is the mentality of that, of like the purest amount of full 3 or 4 rotations is those last three.
Yeah. And then the rest of the elements in singles are, well, not the rest, not everything, but almost everything else is what we call a leveled element. So spins and step sequences are leveled elements, which essentially means that there's a basic requirement for you to fulfill in doing a spin or doing a step sequence, like basic requirements of turns that you need to do, or revolutions that you need to do in a spin, things like that, change of foot that you need to do to get credit for like the base level of the element. And then you do features to make it harder or more interesting or pleasant to watch. And the judges count those features. The judges don't actually, the technical panel counts those features. So if you do 4 features or more, you get a level 4, which is the highest level you can get. If you do 3 features, you get a level 3. 2, it's et cetera. The worst you can get is the base level, which is marked with a B, which just means all you met was the basic requirements, or you did something that like was forced it to be marked as a B, which happens if you make a mistake in an element.
Yeah.
So like, when you see someone like spinning and then they like hop onto their heel for a moment and then hop back down to continue spinning, like that's a feature they're trying to get. When you see someone exit
a cartwheel,
if you do a cartwheel in or out of a spin, like that is a feature.
It's so foul.
Yeah.
Adam famously doesn't want to see any athlete upside down.
Yeah. No, on their own only the gymnast, only Simone Biles herself. That's it.
And she is learning to figure skate. So we might see that sooner than you think.
Yeah. As an example, like in a combination spin, you need to hit all 3 of the basic positions, which would be a camel, which is like an air basque position, a sit spin, which the skater's like bending and their thigh is at least 90 degrees to
the ice.
You're
going to see a sit spin and say, oh, that's a sit spin.
That's a sit spin. And an upright spin where the leg that they're spinning on is straight. So they need to hit all 3 of those. And if they do something and they don't hold a position long enough in one of those basic positions, they have not met the requirements for a leveled combination spin. That's where you would get that base.
Yeah.
Skating's all about rotation. My God.
Yeah. Lots of rotations and revolutions. So I think Adam especially would agree with this. Not that Ashley wouldn't, but I know Adam feels strongly about spins. Like, I think that spins are like an underappreciated element in how many points they can get you if you do them really well. And people like lose sight of that sometimes because the jumps require a lot of effort, obviously, and are sort of the standout in singles. But the people who do really great spins are going to sort of like quietly rack up extra points.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And if we're talking about spins, don't sleep on them. And if we talk about quietly racking up points, it's a good time to bring up the grade of execution. So Sarah mentioned it earlier, and every element, every jump, every leveled element is graded on a +5 to -5 scale. Every element is going to be given a grade of execution. Now that doesn't mean -5 points. It doesn't mean +3 points. Every grade of execution is based on a percentage of the base value of the element that's being judged. So if you have an element and it gets a +2, that's an extra 20%. If you have a -3, that's -30%. So an element that has a higher base value has the potential to gain a lot of extra grade of execution, more so than like an easier element that's done super well. So there's more points to be made in things that are done really well of things that are very difficult.
But there's also more points to be lost. So you're always doing risk reward, right? Like if you have an element that's worth 10 points, okay? Let's just, because that's easy to do like the math. Like a quad loop is close to worth, it's about 10 points. If you're doing a quad loop and you can get basically an extra 5 points if you do it perfectly, because that's 50% of 10, right? But if you do it very poorly, you're going to lose 5 quickly. And so I think it's always like an interesting dichotomy of watching skaters determine like how much do I want to like really push my base value versus trying to push like my grade of execution on lower base value elements that I know I can do really, really well. Because if I'm doing a 10 point element, but I'm going to get -3 on it, so I'm going to end up with 7 points. What if I did a 7 point element and got like plus plus three on that and got like an extra point and a half, I'm going to end up with more points on the 7-point element. So it's a lot of like skaters having to be strategic about what they can actually perform well, because you can end up with fewer points on high value elements than you would have if you just did an easier element.
Yeah. Totally. That's like the quads are more of like a strategy than anything. And the loop is a good example because it's that 10 mark, and a triple loop is about 5 points. So if you think like, hey, I could get maximum 15 points, but if you fall, you're going to get minus fives, and then you're losing 5 points. Then you're also getting a 1 point deduction. But if you had just done a triple and you got plus five on that triple, you'd be getting 7.5 points. So now points wise, you tried a quad, but you're behind somebody who did a perfect triple. So it's all about exactly what Sarah was saying. That perfect strategy of like, what can I do, and what's the what can I do really well?
Yeah. But also, I think Olympics is usually a time of year where we get a lot of more casual fans, and people can get really confused by this sport because they're like, wait, but they stood up on everything. How did that other person beat them? And it's not about just standing up, and that's where it can get into the weeds really quickly. But that grade of execution, GOE, the quality of the element matters just as much as landing a jump. And the strategy of an athlete that's going out and doing a really, really, really good triple loop, and they're squeezing all the grade of execution points from that element that they can, versus someone that goes out and does a harder element, tries a quad loop, but falls.
Yeah.
That also then just, that's the risk reward that these athletes have to consider. So it's not always worth it to just go and try and stand up on a quad. Sometimes it's going to be way more effective to do something that's maybe a little bit easier. And so when you're not seeing every single jump as a quad, that's also strategy. That's trying to get as many points as you possibly can, particularly in the men's event.
Yeah. And also in the way that the points work too, if somebody's doing all of these really hard elements and they're getting a lot of GOE, grade of execution points, at that, it's also like if they do make a mistake, they can gain a lot of points in so many elements. So it's not uncommon that like, oh, they fell, but then why are they ahead? That's
right.
Why. Mm-hmm. They've gained so many points that like they could afford that mistake. So a fall is like not end all be all as it sort of like it was in the past, because it ruined like the presentation of the whole program. Yeah. But now
and this is more true in the men's event than in the women's, because like I said,
it's
like
so
there's not very many women who are doing the extra difficult elements, right? There's a few who have a triple axel. There's one who has a quad. But like for the most part, the women have really similar technical base values of what they're doing. So a fall in the women is going to be more catastrophic. In the men, if somebody has loaded their program up with high value quads, they might be able to afford a fall, like Adam is saying. Like someone like Ilya Malinin, who we expect to win the men's event, potentially could afford two, depending on what he like puts in his programs. And so but in the women's event, it's a lot tighter. So I think like that is where you really don't want to see somebody falling, because they're going to have trouble affording that.
Yeah, because the men are doing like, some are doing three quads, some are doing five, Ilya's trying seven. It's so random. Like everybody's programs are so different technically in the men's, where it's like, that's where you see a lot of that flexibility. But the women are doing a lot of the same elements.
Yeah. And so that's going to be that GOE that makes the difference in the event.
Exactly. And then so that's, we've talked a lot about the short program. We've talked a lot about the elements. Just as a reminder for the free skate, the free skate has 7 jump elements in it. And some of those, I'm not going to do all of the exact requirements of that, but like one of them has to be an axel. Some of those can be jump combinations or sequences where they're done together. Three spins, a step sequence, and a choreo sequence. Those are choreographic sequence. Excuse me, speaking in shorthand.
You're excused.
So the free skate is only a minute longer, and you're actually fitting in 5 more elements. And so it can feel really crowded in the free skate. I'm curious what you guys think of that, because I always feel like it's crazy when you look at the required elements and think of the time differences.
Saying it's only a minute longer, I was
it's shaking me. Yeah.
I mean, it's technically like you can have an extra minute and 20.
20, yeah.
Technically. But like, that's not that much long. Like, it's not, I don't know. It's great. It feels like a not enough time to add five more elements.
Yeah.
When I skated, it was 4.5 minutes. So it was like almost 2 extra minutes. And we had 8 jumping passes.
Mm-hmm. But was it harder for you to go down a jumping pass and lose 20 seconds?
I never did it.
Oh.
I tapped out.
You said, I won't do this.
I said, uh-uh. Like,
I'm not part of this.
So the short program is a sprint. That's kind of the best way to put it. The long program is you're sprinting for a marathon. It's...
Yeah.
It's so intense. It's really mentally intimidating because you have to be on for... Most of these skaters are going to be doing 4 minutes and 10 seconds. So it's a long time for you to be focused in this program. Cardio-wise, it's really intense, and so it can be a really intimidating program because are you going to be able to get through this program? How are you going to feel mentally going into these jumping elements in the second half? There's a whole mental side to the free skate that's just completely different from the short program.
Yeah, it is completely different. But I will say that when we do the programs, I think that like this kind of goes this felt the same for me, where it was like the free skate is just about maintaining. You have to have like good cardio to maintain. But like when we start these programs, I would say that about a minute in is when I started to feel bad.
Yeah.
Like no matter what, I'd be like 1 or 2 jumps in and like your heart rate's already at like, you've get it up to like 180 beats a minute already. Mm-hmm. And it's just about like bringing it down and just staying like it stays high the entire time. Can you maintain that? You'll be good at a free skate, but a short program is just as hard because about a minute in, you feel like shit already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. The long programs though, you will see a lot of athletes like stop in the middle of the ice and do some like face touching or some drama
character
and some just standing still to really like give themselves a beat before they head into the second half of the program.
Yeah, that's very, very common, especially because similar to the short program in the free skate, you have an opportunity in singles for bonuses on some of your jumps. So in the short program, only one of your jumps in the second half can get a bonus. In the free skate, 3 jumps can get a bonus in the second half, a 10% bonus. So that's part of the reason a lot of times what you will see is people will go out and get like 4 jumps out of the way quickly. Then they'll do some spinning, some like character, whatever, they're resting a little bit. They're maybe doing a step sequence or a choreographic sequence so that they can get to that 2-minute mark in the program and then do the last 3 jumping passes so that they can get that bonus on their last 3 jumping passes. So that is also like, in addition to the rest, it's also to make sure you get to the period of time where you can get the bonus too, that you're seeing those like maybe like slower elements happening right in the middle, so that they make sure that they're in the second half to do the rest of their jumps.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are the elements in the singles program. I think let's talk about components before we get to pairs and dance.
Wait, can we mention one thing to watch out for?
Please.
The repeating elements here is a problem that you're going to see some athletes running into. And that's going to be someone either trying a quad and they're going for a quad toe. Now they only get credit for a triple toe. And they have 2 more triple toes later on in their program. Maybe they're in combination or something. And now they've done 3 triple toes. You can only repeat 2 of your jumping passes. And that means you can do 2 triple flips and you can do 2 triple loops. So we really run into issues when something goes wrong on a combination or a jump gets popped and you only have the ability to repeat 2 of those jumping passes.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can't just straight up do 2 triple loops. If you're going to do a second triple loop, it needs to be in combination. You can't just like do those twice. You like would have to do a triple loop and then do a triple loop double toe. If you do the triple loop twice, you're allowed to do that. But if you just do it solo twice, then one of them is going to be worth 70% of what it would have been worth. And it gets marked that way. So Ashley's right. Like, that's something that the skaters always have to be thinking about too. There's a lot of like live thinking that's happening if you make a mistake. Your planned program is never going to include the repeat jumps that you're not supposed to do. You obviously plan it out so that you're not going to break the rules. But things happen where, oh, I'm doing a quad toe double toe, and then later I'm doing a quad toe. But, oh, I fell on my quad toe, so I didn't do the double toe on the back end of it. So later on, I need to do the double toe on the back end of it, or otherwise I'm just doing two solo quad toes.
Right.
So you have to be like, the skaters have to do a lot of like mental calculation
gymnastics
if they mess something up.
Yeah.
So that they are still like not breaking rules and losing even more points after a mistake.
Yep.
So like Adam said, sometimes you will see somebody who has fallen or, you know, made a big mistake and is somehow like ahead of other people. Right. And, you know, Ashley said the same thing about sometimes you see someone who doesn't fall and lands all of their jumps and is not as high up as you thought they might be. Part of that is what we've discussed with the grade of execution and the difficulty of what they're doing. But part of that is going to be their component scores, too. So this is the artistic score. People call it the second mark, whatever you want to call it. I'll go components. The component score has three categories that are each judged on a scale of 1 to 10. So that's easy to remember. You get a 1 to 10 score for composition, a 1 to 10 score for presentation, a 1 to 10 score for skating skills. So composition is sort of the arrangement of your movements in the program in relation to the music and in relation to like the way that you take up space on the ice, like the utilizing the full ice, like connecting your elements together. Like that's what composition is supposed to be. That's more like a choreographic mark, if you will. And then presentation is what you think it is, which is sort of how you're engaging with an audience, how you're engaging with the music and interpreting it, and how expressive are you? Like, is your timing with the music just right all the time, or are you a little bit off? So that's presentation. I think like presentation is the one that I feel like gets like thought of as sort of the overall component mark, because presentation is sort of the one that I think of as being like, did you impact me, the viewer, when with you, the way you skated that? And, you know, obviously some of this comes down to taste of what impacts you, you know, when you watch a skater, but there are some like basics that even if it's not your cup of tea, you can recognize that they did something impactful, if that makes sense. And then the third category is skating skills, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's basically your, you know, the way that you use your edges on your blades, your balance, like how like much power and speed do you have in your program? Are you needing to like do a lot of crossovers to pick up speed, or which is a bad thing? Or are you like able to generate a lot of power and speed with like more like natural skating skills movements? So those are your three categories. You get a score out of 10, 10 obviously being the highest you can get. We don't see a lot of 10s, but we do see a lot of skaters get into the 9s, which is, you know, kind of what you'll be looking for. The thing about the component scores, and this is just a personal aside, but they are supposed to be three distinct categories.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, the judges are going to give skaters roughly the same mark for all three. It's sort of like a block. If they think that your overall impression was about an 8, then you're probably going to get close to an 8 for all three of these categories, when in reality, it should be possible for someone to have really excellent skating skills and not really have great presentation, and those scores to be really different. But we never see that. We never see that.
No.
And vice versa, right? I've definitely seen people who are like great at performing and their skating skills aren't that strong, right? Like, but their scores are, if they're really great at performing, they're probably going to get good skating skill scores as well. Not saying that's right. Yeah. It's not how it's supposed to work, but that is like what it is. Okay. So it may sound like you're getting a score out of 30 because each of these is out of 10, but there is a like factor for each program. So they take your average component score out of the 30, and then they multiply it by a certain factor depending on which program it is. And those factors are based on basically they try to balance the value of the component score and the technical score. So since the technical score, like the highest technical scores we see is in the men's free skate, the components get factored, multiplied by the highest number for the men's free skate. And then there's like a higher factor for the women's free skate than in the women's short program. And so, but they're all multiplied. So the numbers can feel a little bit random when you see them, but they are all based out of these scores out of 10. And then it's all just like multiplied together. So when you see somebody get a technical element score, it's all that like technical calling, grade of execution rolled together. That's the technical score. When you see this component score, it's all of these categories out of 10 plus a multiplying factor rolled together.
The multiplying factor, I don't get it.
I've never thought about it.
Then once we get into factoring things, that's when I'm out. I'm sitting here being like, okay, so the three scores, we've got like the composition, which is like your skeleton, and then we've got our your like muscles in your skating skills, and then presentation is like your personality, like the person that you are. And then you talk about
factoring.
Wait,
that's really good, Ashley.
I just thought of that. Because it's like the skeleton. How are you scaffolding this program? The muscles are like your skating skills. How are you moving? How are you? What's the quality of your movement? And then your presentation.
You should commentate more.
I'm trying.
You really should.
But then Sarah's like talking about factoring. And I'm like, nope, there is nothing
I'm out.
Factor?
Hardly know her.
And then that body has to do math.
Factor? Barely know her.
Factor. I do think the factor is very confusing. Ultimately, like when you go back after a competition and you look at people's score sheets, you can see exactly how it's calculated and it all like makes sense. But it is a confusing thing because it's really hard, obviously, when you're like if you're sitting in the kiss and cry waiting for your score and you get a component score, these factors make it hard for you to figure out quickly what were my like actual scores out of 10. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because it's been multiplied through. So anyway, the factors, don't worry too much about the factors.
Don't burden yourself with the information you
but
don't
that
need
is
to know.
Why but it's not
I
out of 30.
I never bothered myself with a factor and we competed for 20
years.
Some years.
Yeah. No, we were never burdened by the expectation of knowing the factors.
Of math.
No.
Yeah. And I haven't said the factors for that reason. I'm just saying that there are different factors for different programs. The men's factors are the highest because their technical elements are the highest value. So they're trying to balance the component scores and make the component scores as valuable as the technical. They have failed at that. The technical is still far outweighing the components.
Yes.
But that's the attempt by making the factors higher.
The system is not perfect because also, like Sarah mentioned, I don't agree of how the spins. I feel like a really excellent spinner should be able to gain more points and there just aren't options.
Yeah,
and also a really good spinner should be able to add a fourth spin in and take a jump out or something. Like I believe that there should be options for more flexibility in the way that the program used to be called a free skate, so it was like a free you could do whatever. Let them be.
Let them speak.
Let them talk.
Yeah. Allow them to talk.
I still need to watch that episode.
It's so funny. It's like
this
the cheerleaders.
This is a Portlandia joke for everyone, by the way.
Yeah, the cheerleaders go out, and it's like the women on women bookshop owners, and they go out.
Those.
And the cheerleaders go out, and they're like, "What are they doing? That's some sort of dance you should be doing alone in your backyard under the full moon." And then they start screaming at the cheerleaders, and they're like, "Let them speak. Allow them to talk." It's amazing.
So what I'll say is that we're not going to go over components again much. the components that I just described apply to every discipline the same.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep that in mind. We'll go through pairs and dance on the technical side a little bit now, but just keep in mind that like that component score is the second mark for everybody in every discipline. So it matters in all of these. So would you guys like to do pairs or dance next?
Let's do pairs since the jumping is still fresh.
Yeah. You're right.
And the factors are sort of not permeating the brain.
Yeah.
No.
There's more factors in dance.
Okay. So the pair short program and free skate are set up similarly to the singles ones in the sense that there is a set of required elements in the pair short program. And they have to do it exactly like this. And if they don't meet those requirements, the penalty is pretty big. But the elements the themselves, it's the death spiral.
It's the death spiral,
which is one of the required elements in a short program. So in a short program for pairs, what is required this year is a double or triple twist, which is when the man throws the woman above him and she rotates around a few times in the air and comes back down.
Yeah, there's sideways chucking and then there's up and down chucking. And yeah, the up and down chucking is the twist.
Think of the up and down. The twist is what you do with like a small child where you're like they're flying a little bit. Like, yay, you're like
catching them.
Like what every uncle does.
Yeah. And then the throws, which is also a required element, is what you do with a larger child, like a 6-year-old in the pool where you throw them across so they can jump in the pool.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like an 18-year-old, like out the door, like get out of here.
No, I feel like when I was little, but older and could swim when I was like 8 or whatever, my dad would throw us, you know, and we would like land in the pool. It was very fun. That's what I think of when I see these girls get thrown across the ice. So yeah, a double or triple throw it's called a throw jump. Technically, the woman is technically doing the takeoff of a singles jump, like what we've talked about, but the man assists her by throwing her into the air across the ice. She rotates and lands as though she did a jump. These are kind of like, I think of these as like the signature pair element that everybody like recognizes, even casual fans of like a throw. And the best throws are really big. They're really high. They go really far. And she and the woman will land very like smooth and like on a running edge out.
Yeah.
So
watch out for the Georgians throws.
Yeah. The Georgian throws are great. Chinese throws are always a highlight.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Chinese
just have,
throws
like, a different
really
technique.
Look like they're chucking them.
Yeah, they hate that kid. They're gonna throw them in the deep end.
Right.
Yeah. So they're required to do a double or triple twist, a double or triple throw, a double or triple side by side jump. So that's just a single skater jump that they each do side by side, and they're they get. The amount of points that they get for this is based on whoever does it the worst. you're only as strong as your weakest link in these side-by-side elements.
That's so true.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody does a double sow cow instead of the planned triple sow cow, you as a group are getting credit for a double sow cow.
And make note of this rule because you are going to see it a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, they love to do that.
Yeah, if one person messes up the jump, that it's the same as if both people messed up the jump. It doesn't matter at that point.
Yeah, which is why sometimes you'll see them doing like a side-by-side combination jump, and then something happens to one of the partners, and then you see the other partner like looking, and they start a jump, and then they stop it. Like, they're not going to get credit for that
anyway. Yeah, because they already know they're not going to get credit, so they're like, I'm just going to wait for them to catch up, and we don't need to finish this combination. So
we don't need to do this.
But yeah, in the short program, they don't do a combination jump. They just do a solo jump. And then they do a side-by-side spin. They do a backward-inside death spiral. Backward-inside is just like the direction of that the woman is rotating around the man and which part of her blade that she's on. And then they do a step sequence. And they, this year, have to do a group 5 lift, which is a lasso type lift, which basically just means, how do I describe a lasso lift? It's, yeah.
Lasso.
It's Ashley just did a physical representation of it, but it is essentially just means like, it is like the way you would like
lasso, like a
lasso
cattle.
Somebody, like lasso yeah. a cattle. It like, mimics giddy that up, sort woo! Of, yeah, it
with
mimics
the circle
that
on the
movement.
Rope.
Yes.
Yeah.
It mimics that movement.
Just like so over your head and two hands.
Yeah. So those are the required elements in the parachute program. We've described the twist. We've described the throws. We've described the jumps. Spins are exactly like they are in singles. They just do them next to each other, and they're trying to be in unison. The death spiral. Again, how do you describe a death spiral? The man is essentially squatting down and spinning in place as he holds her arm, and her arm is like fully extended, and she is basically in like a plank position rotating around him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On her and blade. This is done, it's like full, like just tension.
Tension.
And it basically, like they go and the curvature of her blade, and because she's like on this like deep edge, she can lean down, and there's just so much like pull and tension that in order to spin her around, the man then squats down, and he squats down into this position we call a pivot position, where like his one leg is on an edge and his one toe pick is into the ice. So that grounds the couple, and that's how they pull.
I know what it is. You know in like geometry, you have the like
protractor.
The thing with a pin, and then it has a pencil on the end of it, and you can draw a perfect circle.
Yes. I know what you're talking about. Yes.
It's that.
I thought you could do that with a protractor. Can you not?
Maybe it's a protractor. I don't know. I haven't used one of those in a while.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and it is like that. Yes.
I want to call it a stylus, but it's not that.
No, it might be.
I wanted
be
to call it like a stylograph or something.
Yeah, follow us for more math tips, factors, protractors,
spiralograph.
Protractor. Hardly know her. Okay.
Factor.
Okay, so the pairs are doing these elements. All of these elements have their own requirements. A lot of pairs elements are leveled elements. So like the twist is a leveled element. So similar to the spins that we described being leveled, like you have features that you need to hit to get the highest level 4. And if you hit fewer than that, you're going to get a 3 or a 2 or a 1 or a base. And that's true of the death spiral is also a leveled element. The lift is also a leveled element. So there's a lot of different features that the pairs are trying to hit within these elements to get the highest level that they can get, which is the highest value that they can get. So that's their short program. And then in their free skate, it's just, again, a longer version of that with a lot more freedom for what they can do. But you're still going to see the twist. You're going to see two different types of throws. You'll see two different jumping passes, and one of them is a combination, like Ashley was mentioning. And then you still see the spin. You still see a death spiral, albeit a different one than you see in the short program. They'll do a different type of death spiral in the free skate. And then you're still seeing lifts. They have to do 3 of them, they can't all be the same type. So they do like a few different types of lifts. And they don't have to do the step sequence in the short, in the free skate. They do a choreographic sequence, but not a step sequence. And again, they're just trying to get like the highest levels they can get and the best execution that they can get. So a lot of the same principles apply here as we went over in the short program. But the pairs is a lot more similar to the women in the sense that there aren't a lot of teams that are doing quote unquote like the extras. So they're all basically doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So there is not a lot of room for error in the pairs event at these Olympics. You know, there's not a bunch of people doing, I don't know that there is a quad twist in this event. I don't think there is a quad throw anywhere. Like, you know, there have been teams in the past that have done those like high value elements. But this year, I think we're going to see basically everyone is doing the exact same value elements for the most part. And so that leaves almost no room for error, which is exciting because that means that the winners are probably going to be the people who did like the cleanest programs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you all would like to add no. or say about the pears?
No.
Okay. No.
No. It's the closest to singles, and dance is a complete, like, even on the International Skating Union, which is like in charge of everything, it's called figure skating and ice dance.
Ice dance is like
its own beast.
Its own planet. Like, I would say pears is like the moon, but you can like still see it. There's a connection, like a same gravity. No, dance is like Mars. It's
different gravity.
Pluto.
Yeah. You really can't compare them. But
yeah, dance is much further from the sun, much
yeah,
darker.
I'm gonna learn so much about dance in 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't intend to go as deep into dance as we could. I think it's
dance
just
has
like
so many rules.
Yeah, it's so dense and so difficult to understand, especially when like the way that the scoring is done in dance is kind of feels like these rules don't matter a lot of the time. So because it kind of feels like there's sort of a predetermined order of how the teams are going to finish regardless of what exactly they're doing on the ice.
It does it feel happens. Like that, and we can only talk about our feelings here.
It is like that and so that, you know, dance is even more so than what I just said about women in pairs. Dance is all the teams doing the exact same thing.
Well, there is a perfect score in dance.
Like, there is such a thing as like the highest score you can get. Because
which is 1 million,
doing the same thing.
And, look for that 1 million score.
Yeah.
Yeah. So because everyone is doing truly the exact same thing, it is easily the most like subjectively judged of the four disciplines, because everyone's doing the same thing. So the judges can kind of just be like, okay, this person, I think I like them about fifth best. And so their scores are going to be just about whatever places them into fifth. And that is kind of the way that it goes. So sometimes, you know, even though we see someone who has better, you know, foundational skating skills than another team, like, they might not score as well as that other team because the other team's performance was more impactful and the judges decided that that's what they wanted to reward. But the rewarding often happens in like a skating skills type of thing. So it's just sort of, this whole thing is take it with a grain of salt. Yeah. These are the rules.
Yeah, but stick around because this does matter.
These are the rules. The rhythm dance is 5 required elements. The rhythm dance always has a theme. This year, the theme is 90s. So they have to skate to music from the 90s. And the tempo has to be a certain tempo. I believe it's 120 is like the base tempo that they have to meet. And they are supposed to, quote unquote, like capture the essence of the 90s and 90s culture and whatever in their programs. So yay.
And take that how you want it.
Yeah. There are 5 required elements that they do. 2 of them are step sequences. 1 is a choreographic sequence. They do a lift and they do twizzles, which are when you are watching. That's sort of one of the highlight dance elements, along with lifts, in my opinion, that are recognizable to sort of the average viewer. But twizzles is when they're just spinning around in unison next to each other, basically. But they're traveling across the ice as they do it on 1 foot. So those are something to easily look out for. And then lifts are one of the ways that teams can really differentiate themselves, because a lot of these other elements look exactly the same. But lifts, you can like really add your own creativity to the way that you do a lift and the way that your particular lift works with your particular music and the particular moment you choose to do it. So the lifts are always like a real highlight of sort of the character of a team and the creativity of a team, and the athleticism and all of that. So that's the rhythm dance. And the free dance, you can do 9 or 10 elements, technically speaking. You're doing the same number of skills, but you don't necessarily do the same number of elements on the score sheet because you're required to do three lifts, but two of them can be in combination or not. So if you do a combination lift, you will have one less element on your score sheet because you will have done your three lifts in two elements. If you do three separate lifts as separate elements, then you're going to have an extra element.
So does the base value end up just being the same if you have one? Okay, got it.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, but it's just counted as a combo lift. So it's the correct. The value of two lifts.
Yep, exactly.
Never knew that.
Never.
You never knew that. You've never noticed this on a protocol. That
when you said 9 or 10 lifts, 9 or 10 elements.
You're acting like I'm looking at dance protocols.
Oh, when I read dance protocols, I go, we have to get our most brilliant minds, like the ones that like were deciphering hieroglyphics.
Yeah, right. Like the five women that were coding for NASA in the 50s, like that's...
hidden who, figures.
Yeah, hidden
figures. Yes.
We need Viola Davis on this.
We do.
We do.
So yes, on a free dance protocol, you'll see 9 or 10 elements because of that differentiator with whether they decide to do a combo lift or not.
Wait, that's so funny that this is coming up because when I was commentating with Ben Augusto at US Championships, he's talking about this on air and I was like, put a pin in that. I'll come back to that.
Well, you did, just not with him, and about a month later.
A month later. Okay, cool. Got
yeah,
it.
We're back to it now. I love that this has never occurred to either of you. Mm. No.
Why would I give a shit about if there was an extra element? I was just thinking somebody, I had no idea. Because in essence, when it is a combo lift, it looks kind of like two lifts.
Yeah.
So I was just like,
you
those
don't
are
know
two
the
lifts.
Questions that you're supposed to ask yeah. if you don't know the problems you're supposed to be solving.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Those are the skeletons to my muscles.
Those are the factors
those
to my protractors.
In my closet.
Yeah.
So dance elements are almost all leveled elements. Mm-hmm. Almost every single one is a leveled element. So the levels work a little bit differently in dance, though. It's really more about the way you're executing like difficult turns. And they're looking for specific like key points in some of the step sequences. So those are your difficult turns. For instance, like there's a 1 foot step sequence in the free dance, for instance. You have 4 difficult turns that you need to perform. If you do them all cleanly, then you can get a level 4. So those are like, it's like the features in a spin, but it's a little mm-hmm. bit different because mm-hmm. there's actual like requirements for the levels rather than a list of features that you can choose from. There are some areas where you can do like an extra, like on twizzles you can do features, but it's mostly more like step, like skating skill type levels is what we're talking about. And several of the dance elements are judged separately. So unlike the pairs where it's like your weakest link is the link, in dance, a lot of times one partner can get a level 4 and the other partner can get a level 3. Some of them are combined, but some of them are scored separately. So like twizzles are scored separately, for instance, the 1 foot step sequence scored separately. So like some of them are, you're able to have two different scores kind of, and you just add them together. So we got 2 level 3s, or we got a level 3 and a level 4, whatever it may be. Obviously,
equality.
2 level 4s are what you want. Yeah. In this equation, if, you know, the woman can, she can survive the mistake of a man, you know, but in pairs, you really, that's not the case.
Dance is so mm-hmm. progressive
in that
way. Your
partner can drag you down.
Right.
Yeah. No, in all the ways that it is regressive, it's progressive in this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. The free dance is, there's no like music requirements for it. There are like tempo change requirements and stuff, but there's no theme in the way there is in the rhythm dance. We'll see a lot of variety in the free dances. I think that the lifts offer a lot of opportunity to see variety in dance, even though like they're all sort of at the base level, technically doing the same things. The lifts make everything look very different. Like you can do a lot of creativity with your lifts, and you also can do a lot of creativity with your choreographic elements, which there are three of them in the free dance. And there's a like list of choreographic elements, and they can choose three of them that they want to do. So they don't all do the same choreographic elements. And even if they do the same ones, they can make them look completely different with the way they choose to do them. So that's where you get like the variety in ice dance. And you know, a lot of it is going to come down to taste, and a lot of it comes down to foundational skating skills, and a lot of it comes down to components, because it's such a kind of performance heavy discipline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
That's I don't think we really need to go much further into ice dance. It is, I think, like probably the hardest for a casual viewer to understand the difference between two ice dance teams in terms of who's going to get better scores or not. Mm-hmm. I think it's like hardest for the untrained eye.
Yes.
As an untrained eye, I think the mistakes that I notice the most are going to be the twizzles, because you're looking for unison. And so you can see a mistake happen on the twizzle.
Yeah.
Ben told me a really great way, if you're like watching a replay or something and you want to see what is happening, if they're matching on the twizzles or not, you kind of like let your eyes glaze over, and then you can see both skaters at the same time easier. So if you want to try that out, I tried it on a replay while he was talking, and I was like, oh my God, it works.
You okay, just have to disassociate.
Yeah, literally.
I'm disassociating. Yeah, oh, I can see them.
Yeah, so if you dissociate while you're watching Ice Dance, you might understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's the only way, really.
Or you might just be disassociating and... That's okay.
Yeah.
Too.
I'm dissociating all the time for other reasons watching Ice Dance. So.
I'm disassociating right now.
Yeah. Well, you're on Milan time, so.
Yeah. So, and I think like a good way to think about Ice Dance is that I had this described to me when I first was learning it, is the goal of a great Ice Dance team is like, imagine if you are, you have like one of those like really nice SLR cameras. Imagine that you are taking photos constantly of a team throughout their program. Every photo that you end up with, every still photo should be beautiful. Their lines should match. They should be exactly in sync with each other. They should be creating beautiful pictures throughout. That's
good shapes.
Like, yeah. So that's like something you can see it, even if you don't maybe understand all the nuance of the scoring and the edges and everything else. You can see when someone is doing that very well and when someone's doing it less well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree too. Concur.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so after this, we're going to preview the team event tomorrow. And we'll have previews for all the other disciplines, which will not be as technical or as rule heavy, and will be more character based in the style of the lore. Was our goal mm-hmm. of doing kind of some lore on the current competitors who are going to be in Milan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and we really wanted these like upcoming lore-ish preview episodes to be like, if you have friends and you want them to get involved and like know what they're watching, if they're going to be watching some Olympics with you, these will be some episodes, and they're all coming out like a few days before each of the events, as a way for them to sort of just acclimate themselves with some of the characters, the kooks, the spooks. And the stars.
Kooks and spooks and stars.
Mm-hmm.
It's your vibe.
Yeah.
It's your
vibe.
Do you know, I just figured out that the it's your vibe is because it's like IT, like Italy.
Oh.
I didn't know. Okay. I didn't know that. Wow. I did see that.
Did you have to?
With.
I only saw because like as
write
I.
Write it out. I never get there.
I'm in Milan. I just got here today, which is why I was like in the middle of recording. You can see me eating pieces of croissant because I'm was hungry.
European.
Right. I'm European.
Yeah. I'm having a croissant.
But now in that France. I'm here and I've seen like the logo so far, I see that it's written like capital I, capital T, it's your vibe. And it's very clear to me
Italy.
At that point where it's like Italy is your vibe.
Okay.
Italy is your vibe. It's your vibe.
Smart.
This is like the Olympic slogan for people who don't know that. This is like, yes. It's written on everything.
Yeah. And so of this podcast, we all are working the Olympic Games, and I'm the only one so far in their Olympic destination. The women of the podcast, Sarah's leaving today. Sarah's leaving today. Ashley's leaving in a few days. So very shortly, we are all going to be in our Olympic homes pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. And the hotel that Sarah and I are staying at is basically like an Italian mobster's wife designed True. It. So we're yeah. also going to be in our own version of Italy.
And that's my vibe.
Yes.
CT's is your vibe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Survive, Sarah Hughes. Oz, your vibe, Ashley Wagner.
All right. Well, we will be back. We're almost going to be on like a daily episode kind of schedule. So you're welcome.
Buckle up.
Yeah.
Here I'm buckled, I think.
Yeah. And then once I just got to Milan, once the girls get to their stations, we're going to figure out our time zone. We're going to see we have all of these episodes like ready to go. But so we'll figure out exactly how we're going to do all of our like events and everything, but we're going to figure it out. So just buckle up
buckle up.
It's get your croissants. It's your vibe.
It's your vibe. Your vibe.
Well, on that note.
Yeah, on that note, thank you, everyone. We're going to go, and we'll be back with an episode tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah. Bye.